Ann Brokaw Show back in the studio here at WGN. That is great progress as far as I'm concerned. Dr. Kevin Most from Northwestern is joining us right now. Central DuPage Hospital out there. He does the, he's running the medicine over there. Now, Kevin, we're back at work. A lot of people have returned to work today, the day that's today and tomorrow, the first days after midsummer break here, July 4th. It does feel pretty good. There were not, I did not notice a ton more people downtown, but I know more people will be coming downtown. How do we keep it that way? That's the big question. How do we keep it going in the right direction here? Because it's going to be up to us to keep it going, right?
Bro, you hit it right on the head. You know, let's take some ownership of this. We want to stay where we're at. We do not want to fall back to a Houston or Arizona or Phoenix, you know, Scottsdale. Let's take some ownership. And one thing I think that you're going to find interesting as people start to come downtown is how much public transportation is going to be used and consumed, because that's my biggest concern, is those individuals who may not mask and wear public ride public transportation in this closed kind of setting. So trains, buses, those are my concerns.
Okay, let's talk about masks for a second, because not all masks are created equal. And I know the whole debate about, I'm going to take all the politics out of it, that's all irrelevant to me. People should be wearing masks when they are in group settings, when they're indoors, for sure, and if they're outdoors, too close to each other, right? That is true. But which mask is better than others? Because you can go to the store, you can go to a grocery store, and they buy masks in packs of three or whatever it is, and they're maybe kind of loose fitting. They're cooler looking, but they're loose fitting. And then you can, or you can go buy the doctor's masks, like the surgical looking masks. What is better to have?
So I look at masks two ways. One is it comfortable for you, comfortable to wear and to breathe? Because really, that's what we're more concerned about. We're more concerned about who's going to be compliant while wearing the mask. If you get a great mask, let's say I got you a box of N95 masks, and we fit you for those. I assure you, Ro, you would not want to wear that mask for longer than an hour before you took it off, just because it's tight-fitting, and it's there because the N95 is protecting you from the virus. So for everybody else, it's find one that feels comfortable, one that you're going to wear. And again, all that's trying to do is catch every time you're talking, sneezing, coughing, to catch any viral material in the mask and not allowing it to go 8 to 10 feet to someone else in case you are one of the asymptomatic people that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. So what should people go out and do, though? If people have to make a buying decision here, and it's not that the surgical masks are easy to find, because they're not. Rubber gloves are not easy to find. But is there a specific brand people should be looking for, type of mask people should be looking for?
Yeah, I tell people right now that this is going to go on for a while. I don't think we're going to be throwing away masks anytime soon. So really, if you can find a cloth mask that you feel you can breathe through comfortably, that you can wash and reuse, it's probably the best thing you can do. That being said, people are going to say, well, I don't want this. I want a disposable one. And for those, certainly you can buy the surgical masks. We call them surgical masks. They're paper. Mm-hmm. They're very flimsy. They'll last you for, you know, the person who wears them properly, 4 days, maybe 5 days if you're wearing it right. But then you're going to have to replace that, and it can get soiled easily and you know, need to be disposed of quickly. So I'm a big fan of, in the general public, people wearing a cloth mask that they feel comfortable with. Personalize it. Make sure that you're having some fun while you're doing it. It'll remind you to wear it. And they can also easily rewash that and use it again.
Yeah. Well, some people are having fun with it. I ordered from the Disney company. My bell. I left my bell at home. I ordered from the Walt Disney Company these masks that are characters, but only from for the nose down. So you got to figure out who the character. And I when I got them, I'm like, I have no idea. I asked my daughter. I'm like, who are these? Who? One of them's Mickey. So I know that I'm going to be well within some sort of copyright law when I'm wearing it. And it's funny because I wore it to the zoo. I wore it to make people laugh. And I get the strangest stares. Now, there's people out there that are also wearing their politics on their mask, right?
Yeah.
People who are, you know, trying to be defiant about that you must wear a mask, and they're trying to prove that their mask is better than your mask. And then there are the people who are wearing the mask and they're putting it over their forehead because they want to, you know, send a message that that's what they're doing. So, again, let's put all of those people aside. Let's take the 5% of the wing nuts on both sides and throw them out and talk about the 90% of those of us who want to keep this economy going in Chicago, want to be able to continue to come back to work, want to keep the restaurants open, want to keep the, I don't know if the bars are going to be able to stay open. My guess is that's not going to happen. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't think so, especially with all the new, you know, when you start to look at the new rates right now of who this is impacting now, we are concerned more about the, you know, the seniors, and now we're looking at these numbers that are, you know, creeping into the 20s and 30s where the predominant spike is. But another mask I would recommend is something called a gaiter. I don't know if you know it. You kind of put it over your entire neck, mm-hmm. and it goes around, and then you just pull it up over your nose and your mouth.
I like that.
It's very easy to, It's easy to take down and to take back up. So it can be hot when it's 90 degrees out, but the rest of the time, it's really going to be one that's easy to take on and off versus the ear loops.
Okay. Dr. Kevin Most is with us from Northwestern Medicine, Central DuPage Hospital. Okay. New information today about how coronavirus is spread. And I find this really interesting, that it really primarily, according to the studies, it's different than the flu, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, what you're talking about now came out of the World Health Organization, a group of scientists from around the world really want us to say, hey, this may be airborne as much as it's droplets. And for the layperson, that's like, that doesn't make any difference to me. I don't even understand the difference there. Droplets essentially have gravity to them, and they're only going to travel so far before they drop down. When you do that, you have the physical distancing option of really protecting yourself. Airborne means it is going to stay in the air longer, and it can be inhaled instead of being, you know, concerned about 6 to 8 feet. We'd be concerned more about, boy, a much bigger distance. I'll give you a perfect example, measles. Measles is a disease. If you were in a room with somebody with measles and there were 50 people in the room and none of them were immunized, but you all were 6 feet apart, chances are within a week, probably 45 of the 50 of you would end up with measles. Airborne, very virulent. So that's what their concern is now. They're saying, let's change this from a droplet precautions to an airborne precautions, which has big implications in the hospital setting and a lot of implications actually in the social settings as well.
In the business setting.
Because, very much in the business setting.
Yeah. I mean, that changes the game in a lot of ways. Because if you're indoors, that, like stores, for example, you walk into a store, it could be lingering in the air. I mean, that's going to be the concern here, and that's going to be the pushback, which is, well, if that's really the case, why wouldn't we have much higher rates of infection than we already do?
Correct. So that's the argument. This group of scientists said, hey, wait a second, we've shown this in a Chinese restaurant and then in some other areas, like, they're trying to figure out how in meatpacking this can happen, and they're saying it's aerosolized at that point. So they're kind of taking those two and saying, we've done enough studies that we can find it in the air, but we don't know if it's infectious at the levels that we find it in the air. So there's still a lot of argument out there about it, but again, like you said, it would be a game changer if we got to a point that we think that it is airborne as well as aerosolized.
Right, but don't you think that it would be far more virulent? I mean, it would have hit much harder than it did. It hit hard, but wouldn't it have hit harder?
Absolutely. It would hit much harder in nursing homes. Although it did hit hard in nursing homes, it would have hit much harder. It would hit much harder in the hospital and the healthcare settings than it has. So I think that really the numbers that we're seeing now are probably more due to this new strain than they are the chance that it's now airborne versus aerosolized.
Okay,
I think that they were right that it's more aerosolized and droplets than it is airborne.
Let's talk about the new strain then. What is the new strain? What does that mean?
Yeah, so, you know, this is an RNA virus, typical to a lot of RNA viruses. They mutate. And when they do, you have to remember what a virus does. A virus comes into your body and goes into a cell and says, you know what, I'm going to use all your materials to rebuild myself. And sometimes when it does, it doesn't build it the exact same way. And when that happens and the cell breaks open and the virus comes out, we now have mutations. So a new strain, and actually this is very interesting because the strain we're seeing right now is about 70 to 80% of the cases that we're seeing in the United States different than the strain when it first came here. So it's definitely made a big change, and there's good things and bad things to it. One is it certainly seems like it spreads a lot easier than the original. But the original one was called D614. This is called G614, and it seems to spread a lot easier, which may be why we're seeing this so much now in the younger kids who are in these social environments and are socially active and can spread it much easier.
They're breathing on each other is essentially correct. What's happening. Is there a yep. difference in how it affects the patient?
Well, right now it doesn't appear that the symptoms are as severe. So you might say, this could be good, right? It spreads easier, but the symptoms are less severe. Mm-hmm. Pluses and minuses to both of them.
Right.
You know,
that,
will this help us to get hurt?
And I should mention here, because I think this is important to note, that in terms of epidemiology and people who study viruses, there is a balance between those two things, how virulent it is, how easily spread it is, and how deadly it is. The more deadly it is, the less easy it is to spread. The virus figures it out, because if it kills its host too early, then it realizes it's in not properly tuned to keep itself and its progenitors alive.
You're absolutely right. It's Darwinism at its finest, right? If I kill my host, I die. But if I don't kill my host and I continue to allow myself to spread, then the spread continues to happen.
Right.
So it is. It's that fine balance of, it almost could have been looked at as what happened with SARS. We're really not sure, right? But SARS had a very high rate of death and then all of a sudden was gone. So did it kill itself out? This one appears to get to a point where, boy, I can spread a lot easier and not have as many symptoms with people, which, again, will just propagate more spread, potentially.
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't know for sure about this yet. They're still looking at that, right, in terms
correct.
Of how much it affects people when they actually get it. And one of the other reasons the death rate is down, which is great news nationally, without question, is because of therapeutic care, too.
Yeah. Yeah, if you got to remember, when we first saw this disease, boy, we've changed a lot of things, right? We didn't have remdesivir. We didn't put people in a prone position. We didn't have any of the other other mechanical changes that we were going to make. We didn't know about dexamethasone and the importance of that. So each day we're learning more. We're allowing people to live longer and succeed from this and be successful getting away from it. So we're going to see that rate drop off, as well as the number of cases with these younger individuals continue to rise. You'll see your death rates drop.
Yeah. Well, there's got to be some good news here. Pete, you're on WGN. Say hello to Dr. Most.
Dr. Most, got a question about carryout food. You know, from the onset, when they said carryout food was okay, my concern was, let's just say hypothetically you went to a fast food place, anyone you want to choose, and the person in there was positive and they had COVID-19 and they cough all over your hamburger, let's say. So now you pick up that hamburger in the car, and I assume that maybe the acids in your stomach and stuff would take care of the COVID in your body. But you also pick that hamburger up that they just coughed on, and now you rub your eyes. And it just seems like, where do they come up with the idea that it's okay to, take carry-out food, and when is that safe? If you were going to go out and, say, get Italian beef, and you were going to bring it home on the stove and, cook it and bring it up to temperature and kill the virus, I totally get that. But how about when you get a salad that somebody coughed on?
Okay. All right, so, Dr. Most, in terms of carry out food. If somebody's coughing on a hamburger bun, thanks, Pete, for putting that in my head. But if somebody's doing that, why is carry out food safe or safer, I suppose, is the question.
Yeah, a couple of things. One is we haven't seen that it's been transmitted by food. So really, if we're looking at it, would be the containers and the areas that the material is, that the food is wrapped in. But we haven't even seen that transmit well. We know that the virus will grow on that. But to your point, you would have to cough on it, touch then and hand it to somebody, have them touch it, then have them touch their nose or touch their eyes and to get the virus. So really very, very low probability. As a matter of fact, not a lot of cases at all about it. Two.
Now, how do we know that? Is there a way to know that?
Well, really, we do it by contact tracing, right? Once someone tests positive, we try to go back and say, tell us what you did. Tell us where you were. Tell us everything you touched. Tell us, you know, as much as you possibly can. So we haven't seen a lot that said, oh, wow, I had carryout food and I had this. And also, all these restaurants are making sure that the individuals who are positive are not coming to work. So you have the asymptomatic person who's not putting out a big viral load by coughing or sneezing because he wouldn't be at work. So you have just a regular talking load. And then the timing of it, how long will it live there? How much volume of it is there? For you to touch the exact same place he coughed and then touch your face immediately, really your odds go down every step of the way.
That makes sense, Pete?
Well, it does, except if you coughed, and I use the example of a hamburger. If you coughed on a hamburger, that person is going to pick up the hamburger with their, you know, fingers and their thumb, and then you set it down, and their nose runs, and they wipe their face. So it seems like it would be, you know, onto your face pretty quick, quite honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that begs a bigger question. Thank you, Pete. How much of this is that kind of flu-like transmission or cold-like transmission where, you know, you're touching a surface and you're touching your face? I know we've been talking about this ad nauseum now for months, but the science keeps changing. It's one of the frustrating things about this. It's also one of the reasons that people who want to deny this or people who want to, you know, they're afraid of it, whatever the motivation is, always say, well, things change every day. Well, that's important. They do. But it's also important to know what the latest is because we're going to probably get the best information the more we learn about this. So that touch transmission, fulmites as they're called, that really a big deal?
No, it really isn't. And it's proven to not be a big deal. Because if you look at the number of people that are infected, and then, like I said, you do any contact tracing at all where they come back and they were around someone who was positive, that's what we're finding more. So the fulmites, when we've tested it on, we know that it lives on different surfaces for different amounts of time. But we don't even know that if it's on that surface, is that enough to be a viral load that's going to cause you enough illness in that period of time? And that we really haven't seen that. So
because the viral load, because the virus starts, as soon as it hits whatever the surface is, it starts to deteriorate?
Correct. Starts to die.
As opposed to being in the air.
Yeah, correct. And, you know, so really, you know, wearing the mask is going to protect you more than throwing away your pizza box. Let me just put it that way.
Well, you can't find gloves. I mean, no matter what, you try to find plastic or rubber gloves, you just can't find them. And and one of the reasons that we were so, I think that the public health officials were talking about masks early on and saying, yeah, you don't need a mask, don't need a mask. They were trying to keep the masks in the first responder world because there was a shortage of them. And I think there was a certain amount of lying to the public about that because, or misleading the public because they didn't want the public to do a run on masks and then have masks unavailable for people like you, doctor, and the nurses and all the other people who are on the front lines of this. And now that we've kind of caught up supply chain wise with the masks, that's why we're learning more about how important they are. And I'm a big believer in you tell people the hard truth up front and then we'll figure it out from there. And they should have done that, but I know there was concern about the run on the masks, but that does seem to be the case. Dr. Most, we'll talk to you again soon. Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate it.
You got it, Ro. Take care.